A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
We got this email from a listener, and it really stuck with me. They've been dealing with frequent moves thanks to Israel's tenant protection laws, or lack thereof, and they've already built a home inventory system to cope. After our episode on military and roadie moving tips, they started photographing their network setup, color coding, the whole thing. But the question they asked was, what other professions have exceptional moving and inventory management baked in as an unwritten job requirement? Not professional movers, people whose real job is something else, but who've developed systems we can steal from. It's a great question, because we've been thinking about it wrong. The best moving advice probably doesn't come from movers at all.
And it's what makes this question so good. Professional movers are optimized for one thing, getting boxes from point A to point B without breaking them. But the professions we're about to dig into, they're not moving boxes. They're moving entire worlds. A film crew moves a temporary city every few weeks. A museum registrar moves irreplaceable artifacts across continents. Yacht crew live in a floating inventory system where everything has to be accounted for, all the time, or someone's buying a replacement in the next port for triple the price.
The listener already stumbled onto one of the core insights without knowing it. Photographing your network setup before disassembly, labeling cable runs, documenting the as-built topology. That's not a home mover technique. That's what film location scouts call a tech scout. They just didn't know they were doing it.
Let's start there. Film and television location scouts, specifically the tech scout process. This is where a small team walks a location 2 to 3 weeks before a single truck shows up and they document everything, every power source. Every cable path, every load-in route, every doorway width. They're building a mental model of how the entire production apparatus will flow through this space, and it typically takes 4 to 8 hours for a single location.
4 to 8 hours of just walking and photographing and measuring for one location. And a feature film might have 30 locations.
Right, and here's why that matters for our listener. When they photographed their network rack, they were doing exactly what a location scout does, creating a reference baseline that makes reassembly predictable. But the scouts take it further. They don't just photograph the power outlets. They photograph them with a reference number, and that number appears on a department map, and that map is color-coded by which crew needs access to which outlet on which day. It's layers of organization stacked on top of each other.
The listener's room color system, which they picked up from the diplomatic core tip about color coding boxes, that's layer one. The film industry then adds layer two, which is function. Not just this box goes in the bedroom. It's this box goes in the bedroom and needs to be opened before the bed frame box, because it contains the power strip and the lamp and the alarm clock.
What's interesting is how that functional layer actually gets built in practice. On a scout, they don't just note that a power outlet exists, they test it. They plug in a circuit tester and confirm it's grounded. They check what else is on that breaker. They calculate the total load they're going to pull. Because nothing derails a chute faster than tripping a breaker in a 100-year-old building and not knowing where the panel is.
For a home network, that translates to something really practical. Before you move, you test every connection. You confirm that cable 6 actually carries a signal from the router to the access point in the hallway. You don't just photograph it and assume it works. Because the worst time to discover a faulty cable is after you've already mounted the access point on the ceiling of your new place, and you're standing on a ladder wondering why the light won't turn green.
Then there's layer 3, which is where film crews really separate themselves from civilian moves. They call it the strike plan. Before they build anything, they've already planned how they're going to tear it down. The teardown is designed before the setup is even finished. Every piece of gear gets packed into what they call strike kits, and those kits are organized in the reverse order of how they'll be needed at the next location.
So the last thing you set up is the first thing you pack.
Think about what that means for a home network. The last thing you set up is probably the decorative cable management, the zip ties, the Velcro wraps that make everything look clean. So those get packed first. They go in the last box you'll need. The first thing you need at the new place is your patch cables, your switch, your label diagram. So those go in the first open box. The entire packing sequence mirrors the setup sequence in reverse.
That's the kind of thing that sounds obvious once you hear it. But most people pack by category. All the books together. All the kitchen stuff together. They're organizing by what things are, not by when they'll be needed. The film industry organizes by when.
There's a specific case that illustrates this perfectly. A location scout working on a period piece set in a 1920s building. They photographed every single power outlet and every possible cable path through the walls and along the baseboards. The building had exactly 2 grounded outlets in the entire structure. Everything else was original knob and tube wiring. So they mapped out exactly which pieces of modern gear would need those 2 outlets, how many extension runs they'd need, and where every cable would travel to avoid being in frame. They saved that documentation. When the production moved to a second building of similar vintage 3 weeks later, they used those photos and that map as a template. They recreated the entire power and signal topology in the new space in 1 day instead of 3.
3 days of troubleshooting eliminated because someone took photos and drew lines on a floor plan. Our listener mentioned that rewiring their smart home network was the most daunting part of the upcoming move. This is exactly how you de-risk that. You don't just photograph the cables. You photograph them in context, with reference numbers, and you create a setup sequence that tells you what to plug in first, second, third.
You test that sequence before you tear anything down. That's another thing film crews do. They do a walkthrough of the strike plan before they touch a single cable. Everyone walks the space together, confirms the order of operations, identifies any dependencies. If the lighting department needs the grip department to move a stand before they can strike a cable, that's identified in the walkthrough, not discovered in the chaos of teardown at 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning is when most civilians discover their dependencies, too. Usually while holding a screwdriver and staring at a half-disassembled desk.
How does that dependency mapping actually work in practice? Say you've got a home office with a desktop computer, 2 monitors, an external hard drive, a printer, and a network switch. Before you unplug anything, you walk the setup and you ask, what has to be disconnected first? Well, the monitors are on arms clamped to the desk, so the desk can't be moved until the monitors are off. The printer is connected to the computer via USB, but it's also on a shelf that's mounted to the wall, so the shelf has to come down before the printer can be packed. You map these dependencies on a scrap of paper, a little flowchart of disassembly, and suddenly you're not discovering mid-move that you can't take the desk apart because the monitor arms are blocking the screws.
The dependency map is the thing nobody makes because it feels like overkill, and then everyone wishes they'd made it about 90 minutes into the move. It's 5 minutes of drawing boxes and arrows that saves you from the thing where you and your partner are both holding opposite ends of a piece of furniture and having a tense conversation about whose idea it was to start with this piece.
The strike kit concept is worth dwelling on for a moment. A grip crew will pack all their fasteners, bolts, screws, clamps, safety pins, into kits that are organized in the exact order they'll be needed for the next setup. Kit 1 might be mounting hardware for the first 4 light stands. Kit 2 is cable management for the main power run. Each kit is a self-contained unit with everything required for 1 step of the process. Nothing is packed by type. Everything is packed by sequence.
Which means you never have the experience of opening a box labeled cables and finding 60 cables of different types tangled together, and you need the one specific IHDMI cable that's at the bottom.
Here's where our listener's smart home network comes in. Imagine packing your network gear not as the network box, but as a series of sequenced strike kits. Kit 1, the modem, the router, the primary switch, and the 3 patch cables that connect them. Everything you need to get the core network online. Kit 2, the access points and their mounting hardware. Kit 3, the IoT hub and its power supply. Kit 4, cable management and labeling supplies. You open them in order, and each kit contains exactly what you need for that step and nothing else.
The listener's already halfway there with the photography. Adding the strike kit system is the next logical step. But film crews are moving gear that's designed to be moved. Road cases, standardized connectors, equipment that's built for the rigors of touring. What about things that were never meant to leave their spot?
That's the perfect segue into museum registrars. This is a profession where moving things is genuinely terrifying. These are people who handle objects that are irreplaceable, often fragile beyond what most of us can imagine, and sometimes culturally or historically significant in ways that make insurance companies very nervous. And yet they move collections across countries, across continents, with a damage rate target of 0.1%.
0.1%. So for every 1,000 objects moved, one might sustain damage, and even that is considered a failure that triggers a review.
The American Alliance of Museums has standards for this. A single collection move, even within the same building, typically involves 40 to 60 hours of planning. Before any object is touched, it goes through what's called a condition report, photographed from six angles. Its current state documented in a standardized format that's detailed enough that you could identify a new scratch the size of a human hair.
The listener photographed their network from what? Probably two or three angles. Front of the rack, back of the rack, maybe a close-up of the patch panel. Museum registrars would consider that the bare minimum. But why six specifically? What do you get from six angles that you don't get from four?
The six-angle standard comes from conservation photography. You shoot the object from the front, back, left, right, top, and bottom. Each angle reveals different information. The top-down shot shows you dust accumulation and surface wear patterns. The bottom shot, which almost nobody takes, reveals things like missing feet, cracks in the base, or previous repair work that's invisible from any other angle. For a home network rack, the bottom shot might show you a power brick that's been zip-tied underneath and is starting to deform from heat. You'd never see that from the front or back.
I have definitely discovered things about my own setup from angles I only saw because I dropped a screw and had to get on the floor with a flashlight.
The condition report isn't just about documentation. It's about establishing a baseline that makes damage detectable. If you don't know exactly what condition something was in before you moved it, you can't know if the move caused a problem. For a home network, that means photographing not just the cable connections, but the condition of the cables themselves. Is that Ethernet cable already kinked? Is there a slight crack in the power strip housing? When you get to the new place and something doesn't work, you can rule out pre-existing conditions immediately.
That's the diagnostic value. But there's also an emotional value to the condition report that I think gets overlooked. Part of what makes moving so stressful is the sense that you're going to break something, lose something, forget how something was set up. The condition report is a psychological safety net. It says, we have captured the current state in enough detail that we can recreate it. You're not relying on memory alone.
There's a case that illustrates this beautifully. A registrar at a mid-sized European museum moved a 300-piece collection across three countries, Germany to France to Switzerland, over the course of 6 weeks. They used a single spreadsheet to track every object. Location, condition, handling requirements, packing materials used, which crate it went into, which truck it was loaded onto, which staff member was responsible for it at each stage. 300 objects, 3 countries, 0 losses.
That spreadsheet is the spiritual ancestor of the home inventory system a listener already built. They're already tracking what they own and where it is. Adding condition data and handling requirements is a natural extension. But I want to zoom in on that handling requirements column because it's doing a lot of work that most people don't realize they need. What does a handling requirement actually look like in museum practice?
A handling requirement is a specific instruction attached to an individual object. This vase must be carried by the base, never by the rim. This painting must remain vertical at all times, never tilt it to fit through a doorway. This textile is light sensitive. Crate must be opened only in a room with UV filtered lighting. For a home move, your network gear has handling requirements too, even if you've never written them down. That server has hard drives that don't like being dropped. That fiber optic cable can't be bent past a certain radius or it'll crack internally. Those access points have specific mounting brackets that you need to keep with the unit. If they get separated, you're drilling new holes in your new ceiling.
The act of writing those down is itself valuable, because it forces you to think about what you actually need to protect, and how. Most people don't realize their fiber cable has a bend radius limitation until they've kinked it and their network is running at a tenth of the expected speed, and they can't figure out why.
The museum world also has a packing philosophy that's directly applicable to home moves. They call it reverse chronology packing. You pack items in the order they'll be needed at the destination, and the very first thing you pack is what they call the first open box. This box contains everything required to make the new space functional before you unpack anything else.
For a museum, that might be humidity monitors, gloves, condition report forms, and the tools needed to uncrate the collection. For a home network, what's in the first open box?
The patch cables. The label diagram you drew before you packed everything up. A power strip. A cable tester. Maybe a small screwdriver set. Everything you need to get the network online, even if the rest of the house is still a maze of boxes. Because once the network is up, everything else gets easier. You can stream music while you unpack. You can look up assembly instructions. You can check your email for the delivery confirmation on the furniture you ordered.
You can stop worrying about the thing that was causing you the most anxiety. The listener said the smart home network was the most daunting part of the move. The first open box is how you kill that anxiety. You make it the first thing you solve, not the last.
The museum registrar mindset also solves a problem that plagues civilian moves, the "where is the thing I need right now?" paralysis. When you pack by room and by category, you know approximately where something is. But when you're standing in a new kitchen at 8 p.m. on moving day and you need the can opener, it's in one of the kitchen boxes. Isn't helpful when there are 14 kitchen boxes stacked in a corner.
The color coding system helps with that, but only to a point. A blue sticker tells you it's a kitchen box. It doesn't tell you it's the box with the can opener versus the box with the spare Tupperware lids you haven't used since 2019.
Museum registrars solve this with what's essentially a packing manifest that travels with each crate. It lists exactly what's inside, in the order it was packed, with any special handling notes. For a home move, this could be as simple as a sheet of paper taped to the outside of each box that lists the top 5 items inside, with the most urgently needed item listed first.
Instead of opening 4 kitchen boxes to find the can opener, you read the side of the box and grabbed the right one on the first try. It adds maybe 30 seconds per box during packing, and it saves potentially hours during unpacking.
There's a fun historical footnote here that I can't resist. The Modern Museum Packing Manifest traces its lineage back to the 19th century practice of shipping fine art in what were called packing books, actual bound ledgers that traveled with the crate and contained not just the inventory but hand-drawn diagrams of how each object was positioned in the packing material. The conservators would sketch the object in situ, surrounded by its straw or cotton batting, so that the recipient could unpack in exactly the reverse order. Those packing books are now collector's items in their own right. Some of them are more valuable than the art they were documenting.
That's wonderful! And it's the same principle as our listeners' network photographs, just executed with a quill pen and considerably more patience. The impulse is identical. I need someone who wasn't here when I packed this to be able to unpack it correctly.
Let's move to our third profession, because it's the most extreme version of everything we've been talking about. Specifically, the crew on superyachts and mid-sized vessels where everything on board is tracked, inventoried, and assigned a specific location. And I mean everything. Down to the individual spare light bulb and fuse.
A floating inventory system where if something's missing, you can't just run to the hardware store. You're at sea.
Yacht crew operate on what's called a ship's inventory system. Every item has 3 things. A designated primary location, a designated spare location, and a replacement plan. The replacement plan is the interesting part. For any item that would cost more than $500 to replace at sea, either because of the part cost or because of the logistical nightmare of getting it to the vessel, there's a documented procedure for what to do if it fails. Who to call, what port has the nearest supplier, how long it takes to get there.
It's not just inventory tracking. It's contingency planning baked into the inventory system itself. But what does a replacement plan actually look like in practice? Is it a binder somewhere, or is it more integrated than that?
It's usually a digital system now, but the principle is the same. Take a water maker, the device that turns seawater into fresh water. If it fails, you're not just inconvenienced, you're on a countdown clock. The replacement plan for a water maker lists the 3 most common failure modes, the parts required to fix each one, where those parts are stored on board, and, critically, the phone number of a technician in the nearest major port who can talk a crew member through a repair they've never attempted before. It also lists which crew member has the most training on that system, so you know who to wake up at 3 in the morning.
That's the kind of specificity that makes the difference between we have a plan and we have a plan that actually works when things go wrong. And it maps to home moving in a way that's maybe not obvious at first. Your home network is your water maker. If it's down, you're on a countdown clock, not for survival, but for sanity. And most people have no replacement plan. They don't know which cable is the most likely to fail, they don't have a spare, and they don't know who to call.
Before every departure, the crew runs a pre-departure checklist that takes roughly 2 hours. It covers everything: safety equipment, navigation systems, provisions, mechanical systems, communications gear. 2 hours of methodical checking that prevents, by their own estimates, about 90% of mid-voyage emergencies.
90% of emergencies prevented by 2 hours of checklist work. That's an astonishing return on investment. And it maps directly to moving day. Most people spend moving day reacting to problems as they arise. Yacht crews spend the 2 hours before departure, systematically eliminating the problems before they can arise.
The pre-departure checklist for a home move would look something like this. Confirm that the first open box is loaded last and accessible. Verify that all utilities at the new place are turned on and functional. Test that the label diagram of your network is in the first open box and not accidentally packed in a random box labeled Office Miscellaneous. Check that your moving truck has clearance to park at both locations. Confirm that you have the keys to the new place and they work. Each of these is a small thing, but any one of them going wrong can derail an entire moving day.
The graveyard of good intentions. But you know what's interesting about that checklist? Half of those items aren't about packing at all. They're about the new environment. And that's something yacht crew understand that civilians don't. You can't just prepare the departure, you have to prepare the arrival.
The yacht crew also use something called a shadow board, and this is one of the most immediately applicable concepts for home moving. A shadow board is a foam board, usually mounted on a wall in a workshop or engine room, where every tool has a painted silhouette. You see the outline of the wrench, the screwdriver, the socket set. If a tool is missing, you see it instantly because there's an empty silhouette.
Of course there are. The visual equivalent of a missing tooth, and the brilliance of it is that it exploits a cognitive quirk we all have. The human brain is extraordinarily good at noticing when a pattern is broken. An empty outline on a board triggers the same mental alarm as a missing puzzle piece. You don't have to count your wrenches, you just have to glance at the board.
For a home move, you can create a shadow board for your boxes, not with foam and paint, but with a simple wall map in your new place. A piece of paper taped to the wall in each room that shows a floor plan with rectangles drawn where each piece of furniture will go, and labels for which boxes should be stacked in which corner. As boxes arrive, you check them off. If a box is missing, you see the empty spot on the map instantly.
This solves the "where does this go?" paralysis that hits everyone about 3 hours into unpacking. You're tired, you're holding a box, you can't remember which bedroom it belongs to, and you just want to put it down somewhere. The shadow board makes the decision for you. Box goes there.
The psychological trick behind why yacht crew are so organized is worth naming explicitly. On a yacht, nothing is just stuff. Every item is an asset that has a job to do, and if it's not where it's supposed to be, the boat doesn't function properly. That mindset, treating your possessions as assets with designated locations rather than as amorphous piles of stuff, is what makes their systems work.
Most people think of their belongings as things they own. Yacht crew think of their inventory as things they're responsible for. Different relationship entirely.
That shift in mindset is free. You don't need to buy anything. You just need to decide that everything you own has a place. And if it's not in its place, that's a problem to solve, not a normal state of affairs.
We've got three professions, three distinct angles on the same problem. Film location scouts with their tech scout process and strike plans. Museum registrars with their condition reports and reverse chronology packing. Yacht crew with their shadow boards and pre-departure checklists. Let's pull out the actionable pieces.
Four concrete takeaways. First, the reverse chronology packing plan. Before you pack a single box, list every room in your new place and rank them by when you'll need them functional. Your bedroom and your network rack are first open zones. Your guest room and your decorative items are last. Pack in that order. The first box you pack should be the last thing you'll need. The last box you pack should be the first thing you'll need.
The first open box deserves special attention. It's not just the important stuff. It's specifically the items that make the space functional before you've unpacked anything else. For the network, it's PAT cable, switch, label diagram. For the kitchen, it's coffee maker, one pan, one spatula, can opener, a couple of plates and utensils. For the bedroom, it's sheets, pillow, phone charger. You can live out of the first open boxes for 24 hours while everything else waits.
Second takeaway, the condition report for your complex systems. The listener already photographed their network. Extend that to your entertainment center, your kitchen appliance setup, any system that has more than 3 cables or connections. Photograph from multiple angles. Label both ends of every cable. Document the as-built topology in a simple diagram. This turns resetup from guesswork into following a recipe.
Label the cables before you disconnect them. A piece of masking tape with router WAN port written on it takes 5 seconds and eliminates the which cable was this.
Third takeaway, the shadow board for your move. Create a physical or digital map of where every box goes in your new place. Use colored stickers or magnets to track progress. Green means delivered. Yellow means delivered but not unpacked. Red means missing. The visual feedback keeps you oriented and prevents the "I think we lost a box" anxiety that creeps in around hour 6.
If you want to get really fancy, number your boxes and put the corresponding number on the shadow board. Box 17 goes in the northwest corner of the living room. If box 17 isn't there, you know to look for it.
Fourth takeaway, steal the Tech Scout mindset. Before moving day, walk your new place. Photograph every wall, every outlet, every cable path, every doorway. Measure the doorways to make sure your furniture will fit. Plan your network layout and your furniture layout before a single box arrives. The walkthrough takes an hour. The problems it prevents can save you days.
There's a fifth takeaway that's more of a mindset shift than a system. All three of these professions share a common principle. They plan the teardown before the build, and they plan the setup before the move. The work happens before the work happens. Most people treat moving day as the main event. The professionals treat moving day as the execution of a plan that was already finished.
That's why the listener's email was so satisfying to read. They had already started doing this without being told. They photographed their network while it was in good condition. They built an inventory system. They were already thinking like a tech scout. They just needed the vocabulary and the next level of detail.
The question we're left with is, what other professions have hidden moving expertise? Event planners come to mind. They essentially build and strike temporary venues on a weekly basis. Circus riggers deal with loads and forces and tight timelines that make a home move look like a gentle rearrangement. Disaster relief coordinators move entire supply chains into chaotic environments with no infrastructure.
As homes become more complex, smart home systems, solar panels, EV chargers, home batteries, the ability to move your infrastructure is going to become a valuable skill. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing a service industry emerge around this. Not moving companies, but home system relocation specialists who handle the technical disassembly and reassembly of your smart home.
The moving company gets your couch there. The relocation specialist gets your network, your solar controller, and your EV charger reconnected and tested before the moving truck has even pulled away.
That's a job that doesn't really exist yet, but it should. If any listeners are looking for a business idea, there it is.
We'd love to hear from listeners about this. If your profession involves moving or inventory management in ways that aren't obvious from the job title, send us an email. We might do a follow-up episode if we get enough good material.
If you're in the middle of planning a move right now, start with the Tech Scout walkthrough. It's the highest leverage hour you can spend, and it costs nothing.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1810s, British colonial administrators in Somaliland documented a local variant of hurling, where players, after scoring, were expected to run backward to their own goal line before resuming play. A behavioral anomaly they describe as ceremonial self-punishment for successful aggression.
Right. This has been my Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps more than you'd think. We're Korn and Herman, produced by the tireless Hilbert Flumentop. We'll be back with more Weird Prompts soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our
show my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.